Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listick, Behind the Curtain. As always, my chance to step away from the worlds of politics and law that you watch me cover on television all day to enter the world of arts, the entertainment. And today, it's a zany world. It's the world of the Marx Brothers. And I know the originals aren't with us anymore, but you're going to think they are when we get underway, because joining me are three guests who, before we started, made me feel like I was in a Marx Brothers movie already. What great senses of humor. I'm going to start by introducing my longest friend in this, the one I've known the longest, right, Frank? That's fair enough to do. Frank Ferranti, who Chicago audiences have known here for years in his work as Caesar and just all these other roles you've played. But this is all about your work as Groucho. And you got to talk to me, because there's like this new Groucho show I didn't even know about that is going on. So we're going to have a little bit of discussion about that. But I'm really honored, and I thank Frank for bringing you guys in. Also joining me, Groucho Marx's grandson, Andy Marx, who is, I mean, you are yourself are a photographer in your own right, a writer, a musician. But Groucho's not your only famous grandfather. We're going to talk about Gus Kahn, and he might not be a name that comes to people's mind initially. He's your other grandfather, but he wrote class. He was like a Cole Porter in an Irving Berlin. I mean, that's his
world.
He wrote It Had to Be You, Making Whoopee, and Don't Sue Me, but he wrote Dream a Little Dream, which I rewrote for my fraternity love song. So
that's quite all right.
All right. I'm coming clean on that now.
But I will take a check after the show. But just to mention, since I don't know if you know this, but Gus Kahn basically made his start in Chicago.
I did. Oh, maybe Frank did tell me that. But yes, Chicago was home to everybody. It was the home of your grandfather, too. I mean, in terms of they loved working.
Right. But Gus Kahn, he emigrated from Germany when he was five, and they ended up in Chicago. And other than New York, during the Tin Pan Alley days, the big place was Chicago. That's where all the publishers were. So that's where he got to start.
I love it. Maybe he knew my grandparents. Who knows?
He probably did.
And also joining us is esteemed, I mean, I don't know, the author of every book written by the Marx Brothers. I mean, I know not everyone, but Robert Bader joins us also with a Marx Brothers sense of humor. And you've got a ton of books. I'm going to put this in the bio when I post it, because if I start giving your bio and more of Andy, we have no time for Frank. So I want to be
able to keep it that way.
I can cover Frank's. That? I can do Frank's bio in about 20 seconds and we're good.
Frank doesn't care.
But for you, Frank, I love you. I'm just kidding you. These guys are getting me going. But Robert is with us, a million books. And you do have a new book coming out. It's the Marx Brothers. Everybody wants to know about Zeppo. But that's going to be the new book coming out. I'm so thrilled you guys are here. I don't even know where to start. But I'm going to start with Andy, because you have the blood in you.
I do. Is that what it is?
So can I just, in terms of memory, are your memories sharp, not only of Grandfather Groucho, but of your uncles? I mean, how vivid is this in your mind from growing up, these five incredible men?
Okay, well, I mean, obviously, because the other brothers mostly lived down in like Palm Springs or Palm Desert, I didn't see them as much. My grandfather Groucho lived in Beverly Hills. And so I saw him growing up just pretty much like a regular grandfather. And when I was fairly young, probably because people always say, when were you aware of him being, you know, Groucho, the film star? And I always remember I grew up in Pacific Palisades, which is in LA, a suburb of LA. And we lived on a corner and it was all grass. And so we turned it into like a baseball diamond, and we would always play baseball out there. And I was out in center field. In the middle of the street, and my mother came out, and I was with my brother, and she said, boys, what's going on there, Frank? Looks like, guarantee you, Aunt Minnie's in there somewhere.
Frank has a showing going on now.
And Frank is doing the stateroom scene during our show.
Yeah, he is. So anyway, my mother came out, and she said, boys, come in. There's a movie on with your grandfather and your great uncles. And we went in, and Night at the Opera was on. And I can still in my head see sitting down in the den and watching the TV. And I remember seeing the stateroom scene and, you know, sort of, you know, for my age, thought it was pretty funny.
So that was the moment. But I'm guessing in your life, or to the extent even when you did see your uncles and grandfather, they were like any other Jewish uncles and grandfather.
Yeah, because you got to remember, and this goes for Gus Kahn too, who I never met, but because he died in 41. But it's the same thing. During that period that I was growing up in the 50s and into, say, like the middle 60s, they were kind of, you know, they were sort of, they weren't the icons that they are now. You know, Groucho was on the You Bet Your Life show, but he was a game show host. You know, everybody had sort of forgotten about the movies. And yeah, okay, he was a television personality, but he was very just sort of like the guy that I went over and had dinner with or went swimming at his house and just, you know, did whatever. And the same thing, you know, with Gus Kahn, because the whole sort of, you know, Great American Songbook thing, it didn't really come back until like the 80s. So I sort of, you know, grew up not quite appreciating, you know, Gus Kahn at that time.
And thank goodness for Michael Feinstein, right? Who's done so much to bring
And I'm on the board of his organization.
Oh, fantastic. By the way, I paid a lot of money for books autographed by your grandfather. So if you could send me a bit of a refund now that I know you, it would be good.
I will be happy to do that. make the check out to cash.
All right. Now I'm going to come to my buddy, Frank. Robert, I promise you we're going to get to you in just a moment, but let me come to Frank, because Frank, while Chicago knows you so very well for your years here, I know this is your second home. Your daughter is here now. She is a comedian performing. I've gone to see her with you. She had one of the funniest lines that I'll tell you guys later. we're done. He knows what I'm talking about. But Frank, this is like I thought you were doing your Groucho show, the one I've seen a million times, but this is like another thing.
Well, you know, it's like everything old is new again. And as Groucho Marx himself said, there's no such thing as an old joke if you've never heard it before. And this is actually a show I'm doing in Philadelphia at the Walnut Street Theater, where the Marx Brothers worked 100 years ago during this time. It's called Groucho, A Life in Review. And this is a show that was written by Andy's father, Groucho's son, Arthur Marx. And in this show, Groucho, A Life in Review, which I did in New York and London in the mid-80s when I was in my early 20s, it's crazy to think, Paul, I played Groucho from age 15 to 85. Now, and there's one actor who plays Harpo and Chico, Matt Roper, and Drea Weber, who is also a big Chicago presence. She plays all the women of Groucho's life. It's a two-act biographical telling of Groucho Marx's life. And this is an all new production. It has not been in 20 years. And so it's like what would have been the Broadway version of the show that I did off Broadway back in the 80s. And people are loving it. This is the last week of the show. Thanks to Robert Bader, Dick Cavett did the Carnegie Hall introduction of Groucho. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, the one, the only, welcome to Carnegie Hall, the one, the only Groucho. And it's, you know, it's a beautiful show, and I get to play Groucho at age 85, which is my favorite part of the show. And you don't see it coming. I start at 15, squeaky voiced, and by the end, I'm, you know, the legend that we knew when we were younger. Yesterday at the Sunday matinee, Paul, I have to tell you, I'm singing the very last few notes of the show. Hello, I Must Be Going, as 85-year-old Groucho. I'm going, and it's very poignant. You know, it's very sad. I said goodbye to Harpo. Goodbye, Harpo. And people applauded after my farewell to Harpo. Good night, Chico. And then I sang, I'll stay a week or two. I'll stay the summer through. And a woman from the audience yells out at the very last, we love you! Yeah. And it gave me chills. And that kind of, there was 1,000 people in the audience. So the fact that we're still talking about the legacy of the Marx Brothers in that theater this weekend was, you know, the Marx Brothers represented Groucho, Harpo, Chico, and Zeppo. There was Arthur Marx's play, Groucho. There was Andy Marx, who received a mayoral citation from the city of Philadelphia, and Groucho Marx's great-granddaughter, Gracie, who was Andy's daughter. So this kind of humor and this great American comedy history lives on in Chicago, in Philadelphia, in these big cities that embrace the theater. And certainly Chicago has been number one in terms of perpetuating their style.
And am I right, because I follow all your postings, the theater you're in, the Marx Brothers used to perform there?
It's Groucho's favorite theater. He played here in 1923 and 24. Groucho said it was the experience at the Walnut was the most important thing that ever happened to him. That show that they did at the Walnut in Philadelphia, I'll Say She Is, moved to within 3 days of closing, moves to New York. They become huge Broadway stars. Then they become huge film stars, but it started really in Philly. And of course, they also lived in Chicago, and they were able to break in stuff in all these kind of big cities that embraced them. New York did, Philly did, Chicago did. But yeah, so Groucho, 50 years after playing the Walnut in 1974, was doing the Mike Douglas show, went back to the Walnut Street Theater just to see it one last time. He was 84 years old. So there's a lot of spirit around this particular production and this experience. It was great having Andy here this past week with his daughter, Gracie.
By the way, yeah. Now, and of course, I think there's one person left of your dad's generation, Andy, of Arthur's generation, and that's Bill Marks, Harpo's son. Yeah. He's the last one remaining.
There'll be two. Jimmy is still with us. Harpo's son Jimmy is still with us.
Ah, okay, all right, and I know Frank, just to say we're going to hopefully have Bill to join us, but not feeling the best today, so that's certainly understandable. We send well wishes. I mean, Frank, the only other thing I want to say, and we'll go on to Robert, but you know, it's not as though you became. By the way, thank you for doing that little bit at the end, because I wondered how your voice might change with Groucho at 85, and you just gave me a of it.
Can I just say one quick thing about Frank's performance? You know, I'm not sure who it is that said it, if it was like John Gielgud or somebody, but one of those guys said, like, a 20-year-old, you know, playing Hamlet is not as good as a 50-year-old guy, you know, playing Hamlet. And so, you know, I've seen Frank many times. You know, I've seen him doing this show two or three times. I've seen him doing the other one. I've seen the TV. I've seen everything. And it's always mind-blowing. But I will say, this maybe because, you know, I was with Gracie and everything, and it was very moving. But, you know, I mean, obviously Frank is not in his 80s, but I mean, you've been doing this for 40 years. So you're, I'm guessing you're close to, you know, 50, late 50s or whatever. Yeah. Okay. So you've, the last half of the second act, like, you've literally sort of aged into, it's one of the most beautiful, you know, things I've ever seen, bar, you know, anybody doing anything, you know. And again, I mean, you would probably agree that doing the old man at this age is probably different than doing the old man at when you were in college or whatever, right?
It's very sad. First of all, thank you, Andy. It means a lot. And I feel that I have a sense of a spirit, and I've gone through my own life experiences, so I can.
Yeah, right.
Very challenging. Everyone's life is challenging. Certainly his was, and that's what the show is about in part. So my spirit is aligned with him. He's gone through at this point death and divorce and children and financial issues and everything. And so at 20, you can't even comprehend what that means. But when you're 60, you certainly can. I have such great empathy for Groucho and his struggle and his success and the fact that he endures and keeps making people laugh after over 100 years. I mean, here we're talking about him. Here, you know, Robert Bader has the show on Cabot and Groucho, and my show's on PBS, and Andy can perform in a show about his grandfathers. There's a lot going on about the Marx Brothers still, you know, a century later, and here we are. You, Paul, who truly appreciates the legends that these guys are.
Oh, I absolutely. And in fact, a mutual friend of ours, Steve Dale, has one of Groucho's bow ties, so, which is his prized possession. And I don't think he paid for it, Andy. No, I'm kidding. Robert, let me come to you. You've written so many books. And here's the thing. When I talk to Frank about trying to... What's that?
Not that many.
Well, I think so. But here's the thing. So, you know, we got blood over with Andy said. We have Frank, who, you know, stalked Groucho when he was a young man and, you know, and chasing him and had to meet him and all of that. But you kind of come into this, I think, kind of a world of just this huge fan. Your sense of humor is right there with them. But what was it? When did you get tied to the Marx Brothers to the point where you're saying, I'm going to even do a book about Zeppo, who was the one, the name people know, but we didn't see him as much.
Well, the first thing I'll say is, I couldn't get to Philadelphia to see Frank's show, which I regret. I'm in Los Angeles, so it was challenging. But I will come and see it in the future. I want to see when Frank is 85 playing with 15. So I'll wait for that. I've seen Frank's show many, many times. And I've also got to say this. I first met Frank when he came to New York in 1986 to do Groucho Life and Review, when I also met Andy's dad. So Arthur and Frank and I and another Marx Brothers fan named Paul Wesolowski had lunch together, and Arthur invited us to a rehearsal to give him comments on the factual stuff in the show. And Paul and I took all these great notes, And we showed them to Arthur, and Andy, you know how your father was with us crazy fans. He goes, oh, you're the only guys who care about that stuff. So that was our first meeting with Arthur and Frank. But to answer your question, I discovered the Marx Brothers quite by accident on television. I was about 8 or 9 years old, and just popping through the channels, I found what I later learned to be Monkey Business. And the first Marx Brother I ever laid eyes on was Harpo, and it was the Punch and Judy scene, and I was totally captivated by it. And with the attention span of an 8 or 9 year old, when it was over, I forgot about it. And then maybe a few months later, I stumble on them again on television, and miraculously, once again, it's Harpo in room service chasing a turkey around a hotel room with a baseball bat. I then later figured out that I had seen that guy before on an I Love Lucy rerun. So Harpo was really my entrance point to the Marx Brothers, but of course I fell in love with all of them. And as an inquisitive kid, I just wanted to know everything I could learn. And I do need to say this before we get too far along here. Zeppo's two sons are both very much alive. At least I spoke to Tim the other day and he claimed to be alive. Tom is living up in near Boston and Tim lives in North Carolina. I actually was driving in North Carolina recently and had dinner with Tim Marx. He looked pretty alive to me. Tim's a funny guy and a good friend. And for the first time ever, Tim Marx and Tom Marx were interviewed for my forthcoming Zeppo book. And boy, do they have an interesting story to tell. Zeppo's life is going to really come alive in this book and surprise people because they just don't know much about him. And that's the way Zeppo wanted it. Zeppo kept a lot of secrets and he did his best to not have people know about his life. And he did a lot of, how shall we say, unusual things. And he had a lot of friends. I'll throw this out there and then maybe people will be interested in the book. Zeppo's got to be the only Marx brother who found out that one of his friends was discovered floating in a 50-gallon drum in a bay in Florida. He's also the only Marx brother who saw one of his friends' corpses on the cover of a newspaper in a crime scene photo. Yeah, that didn't happen to Harpo and Chico and Groucho.
No, but so that I'm hearing like foul play in there somewhere, but it wasn't Chico. I mean, again, as Frank tells the story, as we see it and we know about Chico, the gambler, the whatever. So did he kind of had some interactions, right? With
Chico owed a lot of people money and he gambled and the mob in Hollywood was big, but nobody really thought twice about killing Chico.
I see.
Lots of people really considered killing Zeppo. I mean, he was involved in a lot of interesting stuff. I'm really excited about the book. The book's coming out in October, and it's got a lot of revelatory stuff, not just about Zeppo, but about some of the other Marx Brothers. It's really interesting stuff to me. I'm running out of Marx Brothers to write books about. I don't know that there's enough for a complete
bio. Move on to the next generation. You got a whole other generation.
And I'm a bio of Andy.
I'll take it.
The Groucho and Cabot thing, which premiered on PBS, we can still see that, right? Isn't that available?
Yeah, they run it every once in a while, but they also have it on PBS.org for streaming. But I believe you have to be a member of your local station or give them some money or something, which they don't give any to me if they do that. So I'm just plugging it because I think PBS needs your money, sure. And I'd like you to see the movie. But it's a nice, charming film. I know these guys have seen it. And,
I've seen it too, but I just want for viewers, I just want people to see it. Frank, what you look like you're going to join in.
Well, no. It's also available on DVD. You can buy the DVD. There is a DVD of the film.
You know, Robert, I have to say, when Robert and I have been friends, as you mentioned, since the mid-80s, and, you know, he's like, I think, the number one chronicler of what's going on with the Marx Brothers. You know, he put the You Bet Your Life on DVDs. The best book out there on the Marx Brothers is Four of the Three Musketeers. It's the life of the Marx Brothers on the road. So he can tell you where they were at any given point. He put together all of Groucho's writings from magazine pieces in book form. I mean, the list goes on. And now the Zeppo book, he put Harpo's widow, Susan Marx, that book just came out, speaking of Harpo. Yeah. So there's a lot that Robert's behind because of his passion and expertise, you know, with the subject matter. And so it's exciting to see new stuff come about. And Zeppo's life is probably the most interesting of all of them on some level. Because
A lot of surprises coming in Zeppo's story, for sure.
Andy, Andy, I'm sort of curious. I mean, you are the family. But when you read one of Robert's books, for example, or maybe even see Frank's performance, but have you learned from them? Or do you sit there and go, I know this, I'm a grandson?
Oh, no. I mean, if you read, Robert's stuff, you know, he really goes into the minutiae and everything of a lot of stuff. I mean, I think that I know a lot of stuff, and then I'll You know, and then I'll read stuff and I'll go, I didn't know that. I mean, I think Frank was telling me something the other day that I didn't know. I mean, you can't know everything. You know, I'm sure my dad, you know, probably did, but I mean, again, I always think, yeah, I know quite a bit. And then I'll come across something in there that I had not known about.
And I have one other thing, because now there's a new generation, as you said, your kids and all, and everybody's kids. Do they get it? I mean, you're at the grandchild level. I knew my grandparents, so yes, I could relate to you know, who they were. They weren't famous, but I mean, I understood them. What about the next level down? Because they're all gone by the time, I think, pretty much by the time, you know, the grand,
yeah,
the great grandchild,
yeah,
level is
okay.
Down. All right, what is it? Do they?
Well, yeah, okay. So I have a 34-year-old daughter, and then I have boy girl twins that are 24. So they're not quite. Yeah, I mean, I guess would be. I don't know if it's the next generation, but it's the next one of those groups, I think, whatever those names are. My 34-year-old daughter is pretty up on the Marx Brothers, and I tell a story that she was very young, and I took her to Century City, which is a shopping mall in L.A., and she would walk around and go up to people and say, say, is it hard to sleep on your stomach with such big buttons? You know, which is a line from A Night at the Opera. Like, and she would do that. And it's actually funny. She is dating somebody now who lives in all places, Omaha, Nebraska. He's a doctor. That was a song that Groucho wrote with Harry Ruby. And he's about the same age as she is. And he is a complete Marx Brothers freak. His mother is, I guess he got it from his parents. And he's like totally into it. And then my 24-year-old, my son, he's pretty much into it. He loves being like the great grandson of Groucho. And, you know, people will come up to him and go, hey, are you related to Groucho Marx? So he kind of likes that. And then Gracie is, you know, they're all sort of aware of it. And the other thing, how they know about the Marx Brothers is that in pop culture, you know, Marx Brothers stuff will, you know, like on Family Guy, for instance, there'll be a thing, right. and they do, you know, there was an episode where they were in Poland when the Nazis invaded Poland, and they do basically the mirror scene from Duck Soup, Stewie and the other, I don't know, the two characters, you know, the dog and the baby end up doing
Ryan.
The mirror scene,
Ryan,
right, with Adolf Hitler. You know, so my kids see the Marx Brothers basically come to life on Family Guy, or they're, you know, and the mirror scene has actually been done on a lot of sort of those shows, you know, like on Nickelodeon, a lot of the kids shows, they ate that, you know, the thing. So they kind of know it through popular culture. I drag them with me when I do a Marx Brothers thing on New Year's Day at a theater at the American Cinematheque. So I make them come with me and sit through those. And, you know, there's the thing with black and white. I mean, do you have that, Frank, with your kids, and they don't want to see black and white movies?
It's not their preference. You know, I never put
them. I know.
You know, they were grew up in the theater and in the circus world. So I think they'd have their fill in a way. But it was fun to see your kids, you know, at these screenings. Andy spends a lot of time perpetuating the legacy of both of his grandfathers, and through performance, through appearances, through writing. And so it's good that Andy is carrying on that, you know, the tradition through his appearances, his work,
yeah,
support people like myself, you know.
Well, thank you.
It matters.
Oh, by the way, and Robert, I'll come to you next, but Andy, quick question. If somebody, maybe they have suggested colorizing Marx Brothers movies for those generations.
No.
Yeah, I was going to say. Is it a no?
It's not something I don't
two
know.
Two of their films have been colorized and they're awful, and they've been withdrawn. You can't even find them anymore. But A Night at the Opera and Room Service were colorized, and so was Groucho's film Copacabana. They just look horrendous. It's just not done correctly. There's no need for it. Funny is funny in black and white. I don't have a problem with that. And,
I don't know.
I will say this, in, just like to what Andy said about his experience seeing people come to see them in a revival. When Four of the Three Musketeers came out, I was invited to the Seattle International Film Festival to introduce the restored version of Animal Crackers that came out that year to a kids' matinee on a Sunday afternoon in Seattle. And I figured, well, you know, I won't be signing many books for kids, but it turns out I did. And the place was filled with kids between like 10 and 15, you know, many with their parents. And people were coming up to me. I mean, I was signing books for 14-year-olds, which really took me back because I was a kid at that age fanatical for the Marx Brothers. And seeing an audience full of kids watching Animal Crackers, it was better than watching, for me, it was better than watching the movie. I was watching the kids. Mm. And I to look at what they laugh at. And, you know, for kids, they don't always understand everything Groucho's saying, but you have no problem understanding what Harpo's doing. When Harpo leans over and pulls the woman's underwear out from the top of her dress, these kids were on the floor howling. And that's a gag that had been missing from the movie for decades because it was cut out in the 30s when they reissued it during the year of the production code. So it was restored in 2016 to this new print of Animal Crackers. Kids were just loving it. You know, Harpo is a good entrance point for children.
Frank, do you remember? Because you were, Frank was at this year's New Year's Day double feature at the American Cinematheque, and there was one kid. He must have been, and all through it was this loud howling throughout the entire movie. And you know, it was probably a 10-year-old.
That was Frank.
It was Monkey. It was Monkey Business, I believe. Right? Was it Monkey Business?
It was, and it was spectacular. You know, and
it's one of my favorites.
Me too. Well, one of the things, you know, I've done it, you know, almost 40 years and I've almost two generations, but I'm still seeing young people, as you're saying, show up to these films and they show up with their families to see the show that I'm doing here and around the country. And funny is funny. They have zero context sometimes, but they get that Groucho's a bad boy. And and that the Marxists are rowdy, and they get that they're irreverent, and that's what counts.
You know, Frank, I want to ask all of you this question, but I recently came across a documentary, not a documentary, it was a talk show that the Three Stooges did with Art Linkletter's kid, who I guess had a show for a while because he was Art Linkletter's kid. And but the thing is, it's the Three Stooges and their families, they're in a park, they're having a picnic, it's literally like that. And it was a fascinating thing to see because you have Linkletter's kid who's trying to talk to Mo, Larry, and Curly, and you come to realize they're not really Mo, Larry, and Curly. Those are characters, and they right. And so, and that's why I wanted each of you to chime in this. I'll start with Frank, which is when you developed your Groucho, and when I've seen you perform Groucho, and I sure hope I get to see this new, what to me will be a new Groucho show. Are you cognizant of saying I'm presenting the Groucho that people know because they see him on television in the movies, or is there the human Groucho, the real person element that has to sneak into, or not sneak in, but is part of it for you in your portrayal?
Well, I try to bring his spirit forth no matter what. And all the research and all the writing and all the people like Andy and the Roberts and Arthur Marx's son and Miriam Marx is in the show, Groucho's daughter, all those writers that I interviewed when I was in my 20s, I carry all that with me. And also my absolute love of him and his brothers, because like so many of us, I was kind of a self-conscious kid, and he gave me courage. And I felt braver because I witnessed this madman on the screen change my life. I realized I could be bolder, that I don't have to see the world the way everyone else is. And that's what a great artist does. Yeah. So I feel like it's my job to this day to represent him well. And I try. I know what some of his pains were because I know his family and I've read about it, and I care about telling his story in a way that in a relatively empathetic light. The show that I'm doing now, does show some of the warts, his issues in relationships and the conflict with the brother, and the fact that he could be tight with a buck because he came from poverty and he lost $250,000 in this crash. But he's a complex character. He's self-made. He's a survivor. And as someone who's been in theater for over 40 years now, as a kid on, I see him and I respect him, and he did it at the highest level you can do it, and all of those, the rest of us are journeymen. He is of the highest ilk and a survivor, and loved what he did.
And Robert, when you write all these books about them, new one with Zeppo coming out, I'm guessing part of what propels you is it's not just, okay, here's these guys you found funny, so I'll give you the lines from their movies. You want us to understand them as human beings, right? Because these were just characters.
Well, the thing that really struck me as a young kid fan, and let me just say, I know Frank for many years. Frank, at the core of everything, is just a fanatical Marx Brothers fan. Well, I have a collection of crazy Marx Brothers stuff. When Frank comes to my house, he gawks at it like he's a kid in a candy store. He loves the Marx Brothers the way I love the Marx Brothers. We just sort of manifested it in different ways. I'm not a performing type. He is. But what I like to do with these books is get really deep into what made them tick and how they came to be who they were. And my dream book was to write Four of the Three Musketeers. It took me many years to get to writing it, and then it took 8 years to actually write it because I was nervous that I couldn't figure out a way to tell such a big story, because it is five guys who were very different, living this very weird life in the beginnings of American vaudeville, when they would arrive in places where they just built a railroad station, a theater, a whorehouse, and a post office, and that was the whole town. And they were playing, in some cases, they played a bunch of miners where they were digging a mine. This
who
was
needs a post office.
It's a post office. You have a whorehouse and a saloon. But this is the life that these guys had, and I wanted to know about it. And I learned about how difficult it was to travel the railroads to get to your next gig, and how they were booked, and all that stuff. It was just fascinating to me. But the thing that made me want to know about it was I realized in their first movie, they're in their 40s.
Yeah.
Just begin life in your 40s and become a movie star.
The overnight success at age 40.
They weren't. Yeah. They had to get there from somewhere.
Right.
And that somewhere was vaudeville, which is all but forgotten now. You see occasional references to it. But what Frank does in a little bit of a way is kind of like what vaudeville was in the teens and the 20s. Frank just runs around the country from theater to theater. He's sort of like a modern vaudevillian. Now, I mean, Frank has the benefit of things like, air-conditioned airplanes, where the Marx Brothers were like riding the rails and, being taken by mule occasionally. But it's different, but it's the same. And I was very interested in what made them become who they were. So when you say Groucho might have been tight with a buck, Groucho started life as a 15-year-old kid on the road with a chamois bag around his neck with his money in it, which he would wear on stage so nobody would rob it from the dressing room. That bag in those days was known as a grouch bag. So many people say that's how he got his name. Maxine Marx used to tell me that's not how he got his name. He got his name the way you think he got his name. He was grouchy. But
well, let's check that out. And we only have a couple of minutes left. So, yeah. Andy, was Groucho grouchy?
He could be.
Yeah, by the way, in those latter years, I'm not going to get sensitive, but that means you knew Aaron Fleming, right? I mean, that's the part of the life that we read about, and you know all about that.
Yeah, I was there. I was his conservator at the end.
I interviewed Andy in my Zeppo book. Andy gave me a great interview for my Zeppo book because Aaron was trying to have Zeppo appointed conservator, and he was basically on Groucho's payroll, so he would have done whatever Aaron said. But Andy gave me some good clarity on that for the Zeppo book. So thank you for that, Andy.
Wow.
You were so welcome. Yeah, it was a strange time. But, I have kind of mixed feelings on that whole thing.
I wasn't going there to push it because this is just kind of a fun interview. And Frank, let me come to you. Are we going to see this new Groucho show in Chicago? And I know your answer is probably going to be maybe. But, is that what you want to do? Will we get that here? Because you need to bring it here.
I hope so. I just talked to someone today. It'd be great to do a few towns, major cities with this particular show. I'm very proud of it. It's the best shape the show's ever been in, since it's better than New York or London, I think. The production values, the cast, it's fantastic. So I hope so.
All right. I'm happy to play Margaret Dumont. If you get it here, I will do that.
We could just do that for fun on our days off.
Yeah, let's just do it anyway. I want to thank all of you guys. Frank Ferranti, you're amazing. Chicago knows and loves you. So we're going to wait for you to come back. Andy Marx, what an honor just to talk to you. I mean, you're the closest to Groucho we're going to get.
Thank you.
So I appreciate that. And Robert, I didn't get a chance to ask you why part of your email involves Minnie's name, their mother. But we'll talk about that some other time. MarxBrothers.net is a place to find you, right?
Yes. Minnie was their mother. Minnie Palmer was her name, was their manager. That's all.
Thank you to all of you, gentlemen. An honor, tribute. Frank, it was Frank's idea to do this. I'm so glad you gave it.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks, guys. Thank Bye,
you.
Frank.
You well, everybody.
Talk soon. Bye. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.